Jeff, it's great to be able to talk to you and finally have you on my show. And, you know, talk about what you currently have going on.
Okay. Well, I have a new album called Kings and Thieves, and it comes out November 6th. And incredibly excited about that. I've been working on it for the last 6 months, and I'm ready to release it now. And I start my tour on the 17th of October, which is, I guess, next week, in New Jersey. And I'm going to be going all over the country playing shows. I'm doing material from my solo records, both of them, and a bunch of my favorite Queensryche songs in the show. And it's a pretty cool show. It's all intimate venues, so the audience is up real close, and it's loud. So, yeah, get ready.
Well, when I approach a solo album, and when I go to listen to an artist making a solo record, aside from like Bruce Dickinson or somebody that, you know, with their solo albums kind of sounded a bit like his parent band. I mean, most solo albums, people do them because you want to do what you want to do. And the other thing is that, you know, I don't really ever expect it to sound like the band that you are in. And when you did the solo record, was this planned while you were in Queensryche, or was it done because, you know, the whole Queensryche thing imploded and, you know, all the drama and everything happened, and this is why you're putting out a solo album now?
Yeah, well, you know, January, New Year's Eve, I was sitting around with friends and family, and we're all making New Year's resolutions. And it had been quite a long time since I did a solo record. And I declared that I was going to do a solo record this year as my New Year's resolution.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a much better idea than, you know, kind of quit drinking, so I'll save that for another resolution. But I hadn't made one in a long time, so I thought, you know, I'm going to make one this year. So I started January 2nd writing for the album, and I finished it in July. And so it's been a very easy record and a very memorable one on my end. I haven't made a record this smooth in, you know, I can't even remember how long.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because, you know, I didn't have to compromise. I didn't have to, you know, kind of operate with my hands tied behind my back. I could do what I wanted to do and work at my pace. And so it went very, 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 very smoothly.
Well, I have to tell you that you brought up a very good point about no compromises. And the thing is, when you talk about that, when you're in a band like Queensryche, you almost feel like you might be in somewhat of a restriction, because if you don't give fans what they want or what they expect from you, then basically you get criticized for it. And I know the last album was heavily criticized and didn't get very good reviews from many people, but obviously you have a solo album now, and a solo album provides you the freedom to do whatever you want. And, you know, my question for you this, Jeff, was it a good thing? Was it satisfying to be able to do something without restrictions? And, you know, was it fulfilling to make this record?
Well, you know, when we started Queensryche, our motto, our band motto, was no limits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what brought us together and kept us together, I thought, was the fact that we didn't put limits on our songs or our songwriting or our albums. We didn't walk into it saying, oh, we can't do this and we can't do this, we have to do this and we have to do this. We always approached it as, well, anything goes. You know, we'll try anything that we can possibly dream up and let our imaginations take us where they will, you know, without the limits of you know, trying to write for an audience or trying to, you know, appear a certain way or something like that. So at least that's the thinking I always kept in mind, mm-hmm. you know, when writing a Queensryche record. But I think over time, you know, your audience has records that really resonate with them for whatever reason, you know, whether it's the time they came out or, you know, how much promotion that record got or whatever reason. And then they really expect you to continue doing the same thing, you know, and it's a horrible place to be, honestly, from a creative standpoint, because, you know, the very nature of art and the very nature of music and creativity is to, you know, change and progress and explore, you know, your imagination, and not to, you know, toe the line and fall into trying to please some group of people that have decided that this is the way you should be,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, yeah, I guess to answer your question, you know, doing my own record is very satisfying because I don't have to compromise. I can do what moves me. I can write about what's, you know, I feel passionate about, and you know, explore my creativity at my pace.
Now, it's interesting you brought up the point that certain records will resonate with somebody, and then they expect you to keep doing more of the same. And it's interesting because you've received quite a bit of criticism for not remaining the same, because you've obviously done stuff different. And I know the last Queensryche album was a lot different and people criticized it. And also, you know, you've had some people criticize your solo album in a sense as well. And then, you know, it was very apparent when you put out your electronic press kit that people were really criticizing you and making some pretty nasty and hurtful comments on there. And what do you think about the criticism? Does it bother you, or is it something that you can live with and you're like, you know what, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing regardless?
Yeah, you know, criticism is something that I've grown accustomed to over the years. You know, every record I've ever released has always met with criticism, mm-hmm. except for the first EP that we did, because people didn't have anything to compare it with, you know?
Yeah.
But every record has. You know, I remember when Mind Crime came out, you know, people hated it, and they, you know, didn't get it, and we spent probably a year, you know, promoting that record, you know, to deaf ears. You know, it sold such a low amount of records, you know, and of course, at the time, there was no internet, so you couldn't really read what people would say, you know, all the mean stuff. You didn't really see that, you know, as you see today.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, every record has had its criticism, and so you just kind of get used to it, you know, and don't really read it, don't listen to it, and you just do what it is that moves you. I mean, that's all you can do, you know. if you sit there and worry about what everybody thinks, you'd never do anything.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be immobilized, you know. So you have to follow your feeling and your gut and your passions and follow those, you know.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Jeff, because you guys, I was reading the Billboard magazine article and the interview you did with Billboard magazine about the whole Queensryche debacle, and you talked about running a successful merchandising company, and I found that to be interesting because a lot of record labels and bands are struggling these days in today's music industry climate, and you guys were able to adapt your business model to still do well. And how did you adapt your business model to that, and where do you see the music industry, say, 10 years from now?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball. Yeah, I wish I could foresee the future like that. It would be very helpful. I don't know. I mean, I couldn't even imagine that it got to this place. You know, when we started out, the music industry was one way, and now, you know, 30 years later, we find that, you know, it's in a different place altogether. So, you know, I guess it's like anything. You can't keep looking in the same place to find the same fulfillment. You know, you have to always keep looking out there and trying new things and you know, living your life, you know. And you have to be, I guess, brave enough to take those chances and to keep looking ahead, you know. And I don't know how to do it any other way, really, mm-hmm. honestly.
Well, Jeff, you talked about putting out the solo record, and you talked about going on tour, playing some Queensryche songs, and obviously stuff from your solo records. And talk a bit about the band you've recruited, and tell us about some of the guys you're going to be playing with.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, the band that's playing with me on my solo tour is a group of guys that I've known for years. Guys I've played with before in different projects, and guys I've known, guys I've jammed with. Kelly Gray, of course, a guitar player, is probably best known for his work with Queensryche in the past, and a producer, engineer, worked with Tino Candlebox, is very successful with that. And Randy Gain on keyboards. Randy and Kelly and I used to be in a band years and years ago together, and we've just always remained friends and musical friends as well. We've written a lot of songs together, and Randy's toured with Queensryche as well.
Yeah.
Donnie Evola on guitar, I've known for quite a long time. He's a kind of a all-around guitar player, has beautiful guitar tones. He likes to collect ancient and old guitars and equipment, and we always time because all his gear is like older than us. So, but he likes it that way. Jason Ames is an old friend, songwriter, great singer, and he's joining me on backup vocals and guitar as well. Chris Zukas on bass is my son-in-law, and he's played several tours with me, doing solo work with me. And then we have Doug McGrew on drums. And Doug and I go way back to my beginning days playing in bands. And he used to play with Chris DeGarmo, who was in Queensryche for years. He was Chris's drummer in his band years ago. And we've jammed here and there over the years and different things. And his schedule and my schedule lined up, so we were able to work together on this. So it's really a band of really fine musicians who I've known for years, you know, and we have a good chemistry together. And we have a lot of laughs. It's a good time. We always have a good time wherever we go and wherever mm-hmm. we play.
Well, you just came from a very stressful situation with the whole Queensryche debacle, and you're jamming with a whole bunch of new guys, Jeff, and you're going on tour with all these guys. And is it sort of a relief to you? I mean, is it a relief that you don't have to feel as stressed out anymore like you were in Queensryche, and you're not limited by anything? And how refreshing is it to go on tour with these guys?
Well, it is very refreshing to play with people who are positive, you know, people that are good players, people that, you know, you can you know, live with and joke with and have a good time with, and, you know, there's no animosities or jealousies or this kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's very refreshing, yeah. You can kind of relax, you know, and not worry that, you know, you're going to wind up in a negative situation with, you know, with something you say or something they say or something like
yeah.
that, you know.
Well,
and, you know, it's a funny mechanism. It's a tight-knit group. And, you know, everybody has a different personality, and you live in a real intimate atmosphere with people, so it can get very intense and stressful.
Well, the other thing, Jeff, too, is that you were with the guys in Queensryche for 30 years, and you guys are close-knit. Obviously, 30 years is a long time to be playing in a band with people, and obviously you guys knew each other really well, and you know, I find it very interesting. I find it crazy that this just happened to you. And, you know, were you expecting it? I mean, was there anything leading up to your departure, your firing from the band, or was it something completely unexpected?
Oh, yeah, it was out of the blue. Yeah, completely unexpected. And it actually, to this day, doesn't make any sense to me. In the sense that, you know, here you have this incredibly successful band. You know, we're internationally known. We have a great reputation around the world, and you know, we've explored, you know, our niche in music to the nth degree. You know, and why would you take a completely successful entity like this at this point in our career? You know, realistically, we have probably 10 years of productive work ahead of us. You know, before we're old men. You know, and why would you destroy it? You know, why would you just rub it in the dirt and destroy any kind of integrity that you've built up over the years, you know, and only to what? Start over again? You know, it makes no sense at all. It's madness, and I don't understand it. I am surprised that, you know, these moves were made with such a, I guess, a short-sighted view on life. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's shocking to me.
Well, it was a shock to a lot of people. I mean, I don't think many people saw it coming. I could tell you, Jeff, that many people emailed me and were like, I can't believe, you know, how do you kick Jeff Tate out of Queensryche? And because he's the face of the band. And I honestly, those have been the majority of emails that I've had. Now, I'm not really going to get into the intricacies of, I don't want to really talk about the legal fight or anything like that, because, you know, that stuff's all well documented elsewhere. So, but I did want to bring up one thing and ask you one thing about these guys as well, is that, you know, you had this big tension, you had the incident, you had all this tension, you had the incident in South America, the spitting incident, and then you just have the interviews back and forth of people talking about the situation and the criticism of people. And, you know, my question for you is this, is that even after all that has happened, I mean, can you see yourself reconciling with these guys and forgiving them, and maybe you guys forgive each other? And do you see yourself reconciling with them in the future, maybe?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, I'd love to actually sit in a room and have a conversation. Yeah, that hasn't happened. You know,
yeah.
Since Brazil. So yeah, it would be a wonderful thing to actually sit down as civilized people and have a conversation about everything. And I'd patch it up tomorrow if I could.
Now, with the incident in South America, the altercation that you had, and obviously the spitting and everything like that, you know, is that something you would take back now? I mean, looking back on it, do you regret doing it? Or is it one of those things like, you know what, I was angry, I feel like I was screwed over, and you know, I was justified in doing what I did?
Well, you know, definitely I regret my actions that night. And, I'm not making any excuses for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was definitely the wrong way to handle things. And I'm not trying to justify it, but, bands are bands, and, we're a bunch of guys, and, you know, sometimes guys are physical, and it's happened many times over the years. And so, you know, The Who, for example, is a band that, you know, is pretty known for, you know, getting into brawls and things like this. And, it's not uncommon, definitely.
Well, the music business is a very, very brutal business, Jeff, and I have always had a lot of respect for people that are able to last as long as you have in this business. And of course, you deal with a lot of adversity. It's a very tough business to be in. And then obviously, I respect the fact that you still go on despite all the criticism and, you know, the remarks that are made about you on the internet and stuff like that. And, why have you been doing this? I mean, what keeps you going? What keeps you motivated to continue being a musician?
Well, you know, I'm a musician, you know, I'm a writer, and it's what I do, you know, it's my vocation, it's what I'm trained in, it's what all I know, really, and I have a passion for it that's, pretty intense, and so I guess that's what it is. I love music, I live and breathe it.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever project I'm in, you know, I am way in it. I'm up to my neck in it all times. I live and breathe every project, you know, from the beginning to the very end. I'm the one that's there 18 hours finishing it up, you know, while everybody else goes home and gets a good night's sleep. I'm there 24 hours, you know, working on it.
Yeah.
Because I want it to be a certain way, and I have a musical integrity that I guess it just drives me.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it any other way, Tony. It's just it's what I do.
Well, you know, the other thing too is that you write some great themes and some great stories. I really like the story behind Mindcrime. I think it's, you know, I've taken a chance to really dig into that album a bit over the last couple weeks, and you know, you've written some really cool themes and some really nice lyrics and stuff. And you know, my question is, have you ever thought about writing a book and maybe, you know, maybe down the road basing an album or writing an album based on the book that you write?
Well, I have a lot of ideas started, and in various, you know, in various formats and things that are, you know, more progressed than others. You know, I'm kind of a workaholic. You know, I work 5 days a week, and typically, you know, 7-8 hours a day at writing, and so I have a lot of stuff. And I guess the older I get, you know, it becomes more and more important to me to write stuff down so that I remember it.
Yeah.
Because things get a little hazy, you know, as the older you get. But yeah, I keep a lot of notes, and I have outlines and several book ideas in the works, and my memoirs, of course, and all that stuff. Yeah, but good idea. I'll probably do more over time now because, of course, I'm working at my own pace and my own schedule now, so I can...
Yeah.
I can accomplish things in a much faster way, you know. That's the thing, working on this record, for example, you know, I could never make a Queensryche record this fast.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't happen, you know. It typically took us, you know, 2 years, 3 years to make a record, you know. It's very frustrating to work that slowly for me. You know, I like to get it done. I like to go in there and just, you know, dive in and me over for several months, and then I'm done. You know, got it done, move on to the next idea.
Well, we have Veterans Day coming up here in a month, and you guys, a few years back, you put out an album entitled American Soldier, and it was based on stories that, you know, you heard from various soldiers. And what was that like for you to really listen to a lot of the stories and the things that happened during these people's lives?
Oh, it was incredible. Yeah, just an amazing experience. And, you know, I went into the whole project with somewhat of a cynical viewpoint that was based upon my own experience with the military, having grown up in the military and a military family. You know, I had one way of looking at it, you know, and this project really opened my eyes to a lot more of what the situation entails. So, yeah, I heard amazing stories of, you know, the study of human beings is what's always fascinating me. The way we learn things, the way we understand concepts, the way we put these ideas into work, and how we, you know, how we move ahead, you know, as a civilization, a world civilization, is fascinating to me. And war, unfortunately, is a, you know, it's a major part of our development and how we handle war and what that means. And it means different things to different people. And that's really what I found out working on that record was, because of all the stories, you know, you get a real interesting viewpoint, you know, on how to measure things. And it was very eye-opening. And I came away from the whole project, very humbled by my experience.
Ronnie James Dio passed away, obviously, a few years back, and you worked with him on a hearing aid project, and you also did, he was also Dr. X on Mind Crime 2, and give us some thoughts and memories on working with Ronnie James Dio.
Well, Ronnie was very instrumental in the history and the development of Queensryche. He invited us on our first European tour and, you know, exposed us to his audience and gave us that chance, you know, to play in the big leagues, really, you know. And he was a very much a mentor figure, you know, where he would watch the show and he would, you know, pull me aside afterwards and say, you know, give me pointers, you know, I think what you're doing here, I kind of understand what you're doing, but you're not quite getting it, you know. What if you did this? And that's all you'd have to say was just give you a little encouragement, you know. Mm-hmm. He was like that. He was very encouraging. And quite a man, quite a gentleman, and I had the honor to work with him, you know, several times in my career. And every time I did, it was an eye-opening experience because he was very generous, you know, as a person. He would give you, you know, sound advice. He would, you know, laugh with you, tell you stories. He shared his life, really. And mm-hmm. A lot of people don't do that. You know, they're very closed up and closed down for various reasons. But Ronnie wasn't. He was a very giving person, you know.
Well, Jeff, you were very honest, very, very cool to talk to, and you obviously didn't shy away from a lot of the questions. And I have a lot of respect for the fact that you were very upfront and honest in the interview. And a lot of guys, you know, a lot of guys aren't. And I'll tell you what, you were really down to earth. And, you know, I have to ask you, Jeff, you know, for your last question, what are some final words for the fans that will be listening to this interview?
Well, I'd say, you know, thanks for listening to the music, and definitely looking forward to traveling around the country in the next few months and playing my music for everyone. And hopefully they'll come out to the shows and see a different experience.